team around Josh Allen continues to get worse. Moving off McDermott, I mean, I understand it. People were out on him. But promoting your offensive coordinator, Brady? So now you got a first-time head coach? He's running the whole ship. And now you're looking at a defense. They were 31st in the league against the run. They didn't get better on the defensive line. So they got a new DC now, toggling to a 3-4. I don't know that I love that. We'll see. Jury's still out. The big move was, hey, let's bring in DJ Moore. We need to win on the outside because Keon Coleman, he's not that guy. So we overpay for DJ Moore. And the biggest hit was promoting the GM, giving him all the power. And you look at his last draft picks and it's like, whoa.
That's Jason McIntyre. We need to ban Jason McIntyre from the show.
I was going to say, are we going to get one of those a day?
I know, I can't. I'm not going to. I won't survive.
No.
I might snap, too. Go on some sort of joint mission.
I mean, nothing he even really said in there was that bad, I guess.
The first part.
The tone. Tone. Yeah. I didn't like tone there.
No. It's a condescending tone.
Poor tone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was leading to some dumb take about they're gonna, you know, the words
leading
window
to Josh Allen needs to leave Buffalo. That's what he was.
Right.
I bet if we played out that clip another like 30 seconds, he's saying one of two things. He's either giving me some dumb take about Allen going to the Rams or the window closing.
Right.
The window closing. The window's been closing for 3 years.
It's gonna keep closing too.
I mean, really, a window does not close slowly. You go to the window and you close it at once, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's not a gradual process.
Unless it's like
a really closing
stuck
of a window.
Right. Some sort of hydraulic window.
Which, you know,
we're not
I can't say I have
world.
In
yeah,
my home.
No. We don't live in that world.
No. When it's time to close here. A window, I go to the window and I close it. Guess how long it takes? A tenth of a second.
I will add, it can take a little longer if you have the crank.
The
You're
crank
cranking
windows.
Them close.
Even that, though, that's 2 seconds, three seconds.
I've got a window that won't stay open unless I prop it. How about that window? That window,
oh,
you take out what props it up,
interesting.
Josh,
okay.
And then the whole thing comes crashing down.
That's okay.
So Josh is the... He
holding
is,
it open.
For me, he is the pillar that I put in my window to keep the window from slamming shut. And that is what he is for the Bills, too.
I had my windows replaced recently. We had the old crank windows. And one of the cranks, I mean, these windows must have been like 100 years old. One of the cranks was stuck. So, like, you couldn't, we even put a thing on it. Like, do not open this. Because, like, it would get stuck open then, which I guess in football terms would be good.
Yeah, you want it stuck open.
But it was stuck closed, which would be like what, the Jets? The Jets are that's the Jets. They're the crank window with the little note on it that says "Do not open."
Yes, right.
And then they painted over the seal on the outside, so you can't.
Right,
you got to take a razor blade to it.
Yeah,
yeah.
The whole thing's a mess.
803-0550 is the phone number.
Leg
Kincaid
involved.
Training camp. Mike's been hanging on hold patiently. We'll get to you, Mike, here on the corners. Go ahead.
Good morning. I have two things for you guys. I have a let's get weird idea, and then I have a question. So the let's get weird idea is, it's actually a nice segue because I was listening to you guys talk to Sal. Mm-hmm. What do you think the odds are Kaiir gets cut from the Chiefs and the Bills bring him back as cornerback 4 in a defense that is more suitable what he did at Florida compared to what he was drafted to do for the Buffalo Bills? That's my let's get weird idea. I think it's a long shot, super long shot, but just a fun idea. I wouldn't say a fun idea, but an idea.
Uh-huh.
The second thing, I heard you guys talking about Reggie Gilliam a little bit. A question I have for you guys is this year, obviously we have to see what goes on, if they keep a fullback or not. Do you think Jackson Hawes would be the one who's doing the tush-push to Josh Allen?
That's a good question. I do not think Kyrie Elam is coming back to the Bills at all. I think you make an interesting point about, yes, in theory, I would think Elam would be better in this type of defense than what McDermott was asking him to do. However, I thought that was going to be true about Dallas to some extent, and then it went horribly wrong in Dallas. I think he's just probably not a very good player. So I don't think that's in the cards. Two, yeah, we talked about it with Sal a little bit. Like, who takes on the Gilliam role, the fullback responsibilities? It could be one of the fullbacks they're bringing to camp. Or you've seen countless times throughout the NFL in the last decade where a team will either just never use that role, or if you do, and the Bills did run a lot of 21 personnel last year, which is when you have a fullback on the field, and could Hawes be that guy? It feels like he has the skill set for it because he can block, but you don't, I guess, really know until the guy has done it, and I can't tell you, I'm just ignorant to the fact of whether he did it in college. He might have done it at Yale, I just don't know.
Yeah.
So, sure, like, if this were Madden, you know what I would do? I would put Jackson Hawes at fullback.
Right.
But I don't know if he can actually do it or not. So, I guess we'll find out. We'll find out at camp. I can't imagine he would be lost doing it, but maybe. Like, you're blocking from a different vantage point, right?
Right,
like,
it's a different angles. The whole thing is probably a little different, intricate, like, in terms of the minor details, but that's what, you know, these guys are operating in that realm. So.
Yeah, right.
There's more of a vision to it, I would imagine, than when you're in line and tight end, like, you just know, like, who you're going at right away.
Right.
So, we'll see. We'll see on that. But you asked about the tush-push part of it. He can definitely do the tush-push part of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're not really...
Sign me up.
There's no vision there. You're right behind the quarterback just pushing him forward.
Yeah,
so there's
I'm
not,
in.
There's not as much going on there.
I have not done the work on this. I feel like they were much more successful when Gilliam was pushing Allen than when James Cook was pushing them. I think there is a... I bet there is a correlation to how successful you are on that play to who's the guy that is shoving Allen forward.
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned that I watched back some of that Chief game from last year in the regular season. They can, I think they succeeded on two tush pushes against the Chiefs in that game, and both of them, Allen got stopped, and Gilliam like lifted him forward.
Yeah,
it was the strength of the guy behind Allen that made the play. So yeah, I think Hawes could do that.
Yeah,
the famed thigh doctor from, if you're on Bill's Twitter, you know all about him. He's got a thought on Kincaid. Thanks for calling.
Hey, boys, long-time listener, long-time caller.
Thanks. Thanks for calling in.
How are we doing? Hey, just trying to help you guys set the Kincaid discourse straight.
Yeah, yeah.
I know for someone who's had two PCLs back-to-back years, you'd think he could just get it fixed. But the fix is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of very major blood supply and nerves behind the knee. So generally, doctors can't fix that. Plus, they have a high repair rate.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that good blood supply in the back of the knee, the PC actually regenerates very well. So I know a lot of people are like, why doesn't he just get it fixed? It's because it does repair itself.
Now,
is he a perfect product? I mean, once you've injured something, you're predisposed to it. But it really is just going to take him not falling on his knee the exact same way he got hurt in the first time to avoid that from getting retweaked.
Okay, so is it very different than the ACL and MCL in that way?
It is, because the ACL, they go in through the front, they can fix it. The PCL, you got to go through the back, and that's when you can hit a nerve. And then if you hit the nerve, you know, it's game over for him.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thanks for calling. I appreciate the insight on that. Because, right, like that is, I might have just thought it was similar to what ACL and MCL is. So appreciate the insight on that.
I love you.
Thanks. All right. So Kincaid did not have surgery, and we'll see if that works out for him this year. I think the first time it happened to him, there was a play that Allen underthrew him on 2 years ago, and he went for it on the ground and twisted his knee.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
A little bit. It's piquing the memory, yes.
By the way, also on Kincaid, the Bills released a new embedded video on YouTube. And I watched some of it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He lives just north of San Diego in the off season.
Oh, yeah.
In the mornings, his routine, he goes out to like the rocky shore outside his house and he like picks octopuses.
Yeah, the marine biologist.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really? That's so cool.
Yeah.
I saw that clip on social media.
I'm like, he shot up my fantasy board the moment that happened.
He's sitting on my dynasty team right now. I'm waiting for him to pop. So
if you're out there chasing down octopi,
yeah,
right,
you gotta have a healthy PCL.
Sure, that's the plural.
Three years ago in a dynasty league with Nate Geary, I traded Kincaid to him for Diggs.
Oh wow!
Which at this point I would say has not gone great for either.
Right. No. I was gonna say, who would you even say wins that trade? At
one
this
of them's
point?
Not even on a team.
It's gone okay for both of us.
Right.
I mean, Diggs was.
I mean, he had
good at the end in Buffalo, but not amazing. He was good in Houston, but then he got hurt, and he was good in New England, but never great.
He had like one great game, and that was against the Bills.
And Kincaid for fantasy is just the lifelong debate of, is he going to play enough to make him a good fantasy tight end? And for the Bills' sake, who cares, right? Like, if he's a guy who plays 60% of the snaps and you get everything you want out of him, you're fine. But when you are talking fantasy, and here on a Fantasy Friday, like, sorry, Trey McBride's and George Kittle's don't leave the field. They get more attention. They get more from their offense. They get more targets, more touchdowns. And I think they're just better players. Like, I think Kincaid's a great receiver, but he is not a premier tight end in the NFL. I don't think there are many of those. I might have just named two of only... You know, now that Kelsey's done being that and Gronk is retired, like, who are the premier tight ends in football? If you're not familiar with Trey McBride's game, you need to get familiar with Trey McBride's game.
Yeah.
Trey 100%. McBride is Josh Allen if Josh Allen had decided to be a tight end in high school.
Yes. Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
Colston Loveland and Tyler Warren are two guys that could become that.
Yeah,
you know
Warren's
what?
Nice.
There's a three. I think there's a three-tier top tier for tight ends. Three-player top tier. It's Bowers, McBride, and Kittle.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think I'm done there. I don't think I want to put anybody else on it. Those are your best. You have maybe Loveland, maybe Warren, maybe Tucker Kraft, maybe Harold Fannin Jr. By the way, fantasy, you should look at him. All right, Bowers, McBride, and Kittle. That's the class you'd love to see Kincaid get to, but I don't know if he. I don't know if he's capable without playing 90%, and I don't think he's ever going to play 90%.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's his roadblock.
803-0550 is the phone number. We'll talk some Lions coming up at 9 o'clock. We'll revisit our new Wall of Fame debate. It's family circle. That's where all the legends are going now. New stadium opens up soon. Blue and red coming up. Camp next week. It's Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
I don't know, folks. A lot of things are lining up. So my overall take on Josh Allen, I think I said last year that the Super Bowl window was closed. I think Josh Allen's got to leave Buffalo to win a Super Bowl. The same way we saw Matt Stafford, really good quarterback in Detroit, didn't get to the playoffs as often because he never had the supporting cast. And then you put Stafford with the Rams and boom, Super Bowl. Can you imagine Josh Allen winning a Super Bowl in Buffalo? He doesn't have the infrastructure.
That is Jason McIntyre. You know, I just want to prepare everybody. Because here and there, I'll see some social media nonsense where someone has photoshopped Allen into a Rams uniform. That is going to happen more than you want it to the day Matthew Stafford retires if Josh Allen has not won a Super Bowl. Or at least been to one. If they've been to one and they got really close, then that'll kill it. But that right there, which is infuriating to listen to, is going to happen tenfold the day Matthew Stafford retires. It's absolutely going to be, Allen and his wife that is in Hollywood are going to move to L.A., and he's going to join Sean McVay, McVay's next Stafford trade. That's going to happen. He's from California, right? I have zero worry at all about him ever actually leaving this team. All I know is you're going to get people that are looking for attention like that, that are going to throw that out there as a take because it'll get attention. Negative, probably. Right. More negative attention than anything.
Well, sure.
Of course.
I don't know how you say that and expect a positive reaction from anyone around here, but yeah, I don't know. I don't have room for that.
All I know is the Allen Rams take or idea or, could you imagine? It's going to happen little by little more and more until Stafford retires, and then I think it could happen a lot.
It's in our mentions on Twitter weekly.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we get them sent to us.
Maybe
yeah.
I'm just good at avoiding it,
maybe,
honestly.
Maybe.
But even I see it, like, once in a while. So, 803-0550 is the phone number. We'll get to some hockey in the next hour, but how bought in are you on the Bills this offseason? Not you know, whether you want them to win, but how bought in are you on their plan that they laid out this offseason, all the moves they made, including the coach? How bought in are you on that working? 803-0550 is the phone number. Ed in Syracuse is first up the segment. Hey, Ed.
Hey, good morning, boys.
Morning.
Morning. As far as being bought in, I'm cautiously optimistic, I'll say. I think they're headed in the right direction. I don't think this year is going to be the year for it. I think there's too much transition that needs to take place that just this one offseason isn't going to be enough. Like Leonard's defense, you know, just switching over, I don't think they have the personnel to pull that off. I'm hoping with Brady having nobody over top of him and being able to run the offense how he wants to, maybe they're going to open it up a little bit more, but they still need some pieces to do that as well. I think, you know, at the end of last season, I felt like there needed to be a change. I'm not sure that McDermott was the guy I would have chose to change, but I'm very sure that the organization didn't handle his transition, him being let go, in the respect that I think he, for what he did for the organization, the city, the fan base, he deserved more. He deserved better than what he got from that.
Yeah.
I think he reached his peak probably with the team, with either the GM where they're at or however it went. I'm hoping maybe the younger Joe Brady will be able to kind of instill some of that new NFL into the team. But, McDermott, I love him. And my biggest worry for him is the Jets fire Aaron Glenn after the season, and he's in our division.
I have thought about that too, Ed, actually, as an outcome for him. I would want to think he would not go work for that organization and owner because I guess he could. I mean, he values stability and values culture, and he would be going to the worst place in the league for that.
Right.
But when he took over the Bills, they maybe were the worst team in the league at that.
Yes, sure, that's true. Although that's a first job.
Right.
You got to kind of take whatever you can get when you're in that position versus a guy that had a job for 9 years. So that might help.
Yeah.
But I could also see him being like, oh, I can fix that. And that's kind of a sort of a competitive thing where it's like, well, even the worst, I can go in and rectify.
I'm going to make the Jets relevant again.
I did it in Buffalo. I can do it in New York.
I mean, I'm with you otherwise. I don't want him to become the Jets coach in a year because that probably makes the Jets at least competitive year to year and a little bit more competitive when they play you head to head. And I don't want that. I want them to continue to be a doormat. So
right.
I don't know. We'll see what he does. He's not coaching this year. But there's the McDermott versus Brady part of that, though. I agree that it didn't feel right the way it happened because it felt like McDermott maybe got pushed out in part, not just because of the playoff failure part, which I will defend him on because I think since 13 seconds, he grew a lot on that side of the ball. If you told me that you wanted to fire him because of 13 seconds,
fine.
Same. Like, or even the day after. That was the most egregious two drives defensively in maybe franchise history. So that is there. And if you want that to be the reason, the catalyst for why he deserved to go, I understand that. But there was growth. And there was growth on his side of the ball in those playoff moments late. And he was doing it with the roster he had. And it felt like that maybe there's a belief because of the report about him talking about the roster not being up to, you know,
right,
proper
standard.
And kind of leading on to that, when he was asked in a press conference last season, do you believe you have a Super Bowl caliber roster? And he said, I love these players.
Right. When Bean was asked the same question, and he said yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that just is logical to me. And if any part of, well, he's not the coach anymore because he didn't believe in the roster. Of course he didn't believe in the roster. Look at the roster from last season.
Right.
So, but that doesn't have to matter to why or to the football decision-making part of it, right? Like, that's all feelings. That's all, I mean, I guess that is internal politics more right. than it would be anything. But what you'd be losing on the field, I think, if anything, from McDermott leaving, is your floor defensively has now gone down while you're hoping your ceiling has gone up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The floor with McDermott, we saw it last year, I think, with a bunch of guys that aren't in the league anymore, past their prime players, way past their prime players, right? Jordan yeah. Poyer, last stand of his career. Trey White, same thing. Matt Milano, all the injuries he had dealt with, he's out there on the field. Joey Bosa, not playing football anymore. No. He's like your top edge rusher, like yep. your guy to go get the quarterback. With all of those players, Terrell Bernard playing through injury all year. All those guys, they were not a bottom 10 defense. We had a bet about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because like that was the thing about McDermott. Like I had bet actually against Jeremy just because I thought he'd be the coach for long enough that there'd be one year in there that'd be weird. But why did Jeremy bet me that he would never have a bottom 10 defense? Because the way he coaches defense, it's almost impossible to have like a Bengals level defense.
Yeah.
And even with all of the players he had last year, they managed to be pretty much a middle of the pack defense. With Jim Leonard, I like the Leonard hire a lot. I love the mentality and the way he coaches defense. I think that's exciting, and I don't know that he's going to be able to do it, though, with lesser players. If he had the right people, then I think that they could be
super nasty, yeah.
dominant yeah. defense that is terrifying in playoff games, and that's what you're looking for. So I like that, and I'm optimistic about it. But what's the floor now? I don't know. Is it, well, at worst, I'm middle of the pack? I don't know that that's true. It might be true now that you could be the 25th defense in the league, the 27th ranked defense in the league. It just is, it's an unknown factor with Leonard versus McDermott. We just knew you at least had a certain caliber of play you were going to get on that side of the ball because of the system, basically, that he ran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would even maybe venture to guess that the same thing is true of the offense in terms of higher ceiling but lower floor, because if all this stuff about how McDermott put a sort of safety, you know, case on the offense for Brady, if that is how it was operating, then I think obviously the ceiling rises up because Brady's free to do whatever he wants to do and can scheme up it however he wants to. But it also means that if there's no sort of guardrails to if Brady gets carried away in some game to keep him in check. And so could that bite them in some way? Does it get Ken Dorsey-y? I don't see yeah. that happening, but I think that we don't know what it looks like yet, and so that possibility has to be considered.
Sure. That, though, I still believe that their floor offensively is still, because of Allen, never right. lower than, like, you're never going to be outside the top 10 offenses in
that's,
the league.
That's right. true.
And yes. even with the, you know, what you just said about Brady and everything, we have games to look back at where he was big on the safety net himself. The Pittsburgh game where he just ran the same play 18 times because they weren't sure. giving him anything else. Like, he hasn't shown that he's been one to really go off the handle and risk the
that's
game,
right.
you know? So I guess that I could see staying pretty similar at the end of the day.
I like remembering things about that season that I had forgotten. That was one of them until yeah. that moment. That's right. They ran the same play. It was
the entire game.
The entire
they didn't
game.
Change
the
whole, it because yeah, it just, Pittsburgh wasn't adjusting. So he's like, all right, we're just going to
What
take
was
you
the
apart.
Play? It was just.
It was a gap run
yes.
with Cook.
Yeah.
I think maybe to the left.
Allen didn't do a thing in that game. It was essentially a bye for him.
It was
like there was nothing.
Absurd.
Yeah, Allen was 15 of 23 for 123 yards.
yeah. Yeah. And James
that's
Cook
right.
was unbelievable.
That's
yeah.
right. That did happen.
So that's where I'm like, I don't know. I think the floor with Brady might stay kind of where it's at because he's never really shown to go off the handle, and
yeah.
that wasn't McDermott calling those runs. That was him, you know? So.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, I don't think they're ever going to be worse than a top 10 offense, and that's with Brady. That's with pretty much anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Almost anybody, you know, within reason, that
yeah.
would be their
right,
offensive
Right, if Doug Marrone got his hand on the offense, we'd
yeah,
probably
right.
say no. Yeah,
yeah exactly. yeah. So I want to stop short maybe of that just a little bit. But, yeah, any competent offensive coordinator in the league, I think you're probably getting a really high floor because of your quarterback. But defensively, of course, it's just it'll be the Wild West. It could be anything when you bring in somebody new and different players. Robert in Medina's next. Hey, Robert.
Yes, how you doing? My question is about Joe Brady and Josh Allen. I remember hearing a press conference where they talked about getting Josh Allen's opinion, and I was just wondering what your guys' thoughts are on Josh Allen's influence on hiring Joe Brady. You know, it's Joe Brady and Josh Allen. Are they tight? Do they like each other? I know they're closer in age.
Yep.
So just that's it. I was just wondering about that.
Yeah, I mean, they're tight. They're close. They like each other. They've been paired together for a while. Remember, Joe Brady was the quarterback's coach before he was even offensive coordinator, so the relationship even extends beyond that. It's three jobs now. He was in the interview process, and it's hard for me to believe he was not influential to some degree. To what extent, though? No idea. No idea whatsoever. It could have meant nothing to who they ultimately picked. It could have meant everything to who they ultimately picked. I don't know. I know the Bills would not want it to seem like Allen just picked his guy as the head coach.
Would his guy have been Philip Rivers at the end of the day, though?
I forgot about the Philip Rivers thing. because then at that point, it's just, well, your quarterback's making all your decisions for you. You're just kneeling at the altar for him. But that, I don't know that that actually is true. I don't know that it isn't. He was involved to some degrees. A star quarterback, he was in the meetings, some of the meetings, not even all of them. But I don't know. I don't know whether or not they just picked the guy Allen would have wanted them to pick. You're right. Like, Rivers might have been the answer then. 803-0550 is the phone number. Thanks for the call, Robert. When we come back, where ESPN ranked the Bills in young talent, they ranked all 32 teams. And as much as where the Bills are, who's number one is even maybe more interesting. That's next.
When you start out the first few practices, it's almost like June. It's almost like mandatory mini camp. And so I kind of stay still watching the skills at that point. But once we get the pads on, I go to the, you know, O-line, D-line, and 9-on-7, because that's where the game's played. It's played in, you know, in the trenches, and you've got to be good there or you're going to probably struggle. And so I try to get to really evaluating those guys.
Bill's GM, or what is it now? President of Football operations or vice, something I should know. Brandon Bean with Pat McAfee.
It's a big fancy title. I'm honestly not positive of the wording.
Can I settle for GM? I don't want to be. I'm not trying to condescend.
Right. He definitely is the GM, but he definitely is something else on top of that. So you're not going to be wrong calling him the Bills GM.
No, but the higher title should come in first.
Right.
So it would be the dot, 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 and general manager. Right.
It is president of football operations.
There it is.
Right, you were right.
Nailed it.
All right.
PFO. POFO.
You gotta get the pads on. Wait till the pads come on.
The pads.
The pads start popping. Wait till the pads start popping. Hey, you know what I can't wait for? I can't wait to hit somebody in a different colored jersey.
Which they'll do. Not only in games, but also in Cleveland. They'll go to Cleveland.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
That'll be the line.
It'll be good to get out there against somebody in a different colored jersey.
You sound like you're in regular season shape.
There's been reps.
I mean, so many years of it. You do it with your eyes closed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Not that that even changes anything. Try saying that with your eyes closed.
Right now my eyes are closed. I sound the same. My eyes closed.
I can't wait to hit some people pads in different color jerseys. It's easy. No sweat. How about this point? Sigmund Bloom suggested it, and I feel like as we get closer to the season, this is becoming more and more frequently said. In his words, the idea of Sean McDermott as a wet blanket on the offense. I think maybe one of Sigmund's other favorite phrases is the drumbeat of the offseason. You know, like there's momentum toward certain players playing prominent roles or whatever gets said, you know, the drumbeat. I think the drumbeat has been, I think it started and will probably continue in this direction. The idea that Brady was constrained. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. To me, it seems a little bit too easy.
Yeah.
It may be unfair to McDermott. Really.
It may be, but it also, however much he, it certainly was, I think I made this point earlier in the week, like the first moment of this season where it sounded, last season, I should say, that it sounded like maybe things weren't super peachy between Bean and McDermott, was when McDermott wanted to push back on what his reputation appeared to be about what we all know you want to run the ball. Hold it. I never said exactly that, but it might be unfair. It's a convenient narrative. He's the guy that's gone. They haven't thrown the ball like crazy. They haven't had a number one receiver. Everybody eats all this stuff. And if you want to pin it all on him, you might be right to do that. But even if he is balking at that while he's still here and trying to sort of set the record straight, the way that he is perceived by the people who work with him can have an impact. This can happen. I don't want to compare like the head coach to being a parent and talking to your children, but sometimes you can say the thing gently and appropriately and still not exactly be heard because you're the one saying it. And the preconceived notion of the listener is that you don't like this thing. So even though you're telling me, like, I'm just imagining a conversation, not during a game or anything, but like on a Wednesday or a Thursday where the game plan's being put together and, they're talking and McDermott says, no, I'm fine if you want to throw on first down all these times or whatever the plan is for the first 15 plays, scripted or whatever. But even if he endorses it, I could still see someone in Brady's shoes going like, I don't think he really wants that though. You just sort of assume because of someone's reputation and maybe how they've sounded other times to you. I think that could have even been, I don't want to say subliminally necessarily, but like just subconsciously you could, that's kind of the same thing. If you're Brady, you might have felt like I don't want to do too much of one thing, and maybe that's pass the ball. We are running it well. We've got a good line. You're not going to turn it over likely if we keep running it, and you might just sort of fall into a role, not setting out to be a pleaser, but to be a pleaser. I want to make my boss happy, so I'm gonna try to do this in a way that will get me that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that can be the fault of the listener, Brady, in this case, making assumptions, and not really hearing the words that are being told to you. So I think his reputation, he was here so long, and there is a lot of, stuff that I think, I admired McDermott, especially the last few years, because I think he really did try to evolve. I think he was conscious about what his flaws were and what his reputation was. And I think he made strides to try to change that. But sometimes those preconceived ideas are hard to shake for the people around a person like that.
I think separately, why is there this particular drumbeat, if that's the word for it, is because the Bills would want, not in a really critical way, but they would, that's the message they'd want out. I mean, there's always this, there's some level of uncertainty about Brady, about the new coach. He's walking into some pretty big shoes here. And I mean, here's Bean talking, like anybody could be this. He can be defensive about kind of what you got promoted and McDermott got fired. Fans are kind of low on him maybe for any time since he's been here. So what you'd want, not that they're talking to Sigmund necessarily, but what you'd want to have people think, and this, I think, listen for this once we get into camp, whether it's through Sal or other people in the media, they're going to talk like, not all of them, but I think this is what the Bills want you to think, is that Brady couldn't really, as good as we were,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he wasn't a completely ridiculous choice or anything. I mean, they had a top offense, but, you know, really, we could have been something else or something more. I think also what's interesting about this, so imagine for a moment that you're him, that you're Brady, and, the you know, here it is. Here's your big chance, and you have a big advantage for these things with Allen as your quarterback. Like, you're starting off at a great point. You go to Houston the first game, and if there's any team in the NFL where you might not want to do the thing that lots of people want from you,
you might not have Allen standing in the pocket for 4 seconds 40 times in this game.
At Houston is maybe the worst draw you could get in the NFL.
Right.
I mean, Seattle, maybe. You're going in, and the Bills have had a tough time in Houston. Like, you're going into a stadium where they can raise hell. And, okay, well, I kind of want to prove to everybody that I'm not just a James Cook fiend, you know? Like, I know that Allen is great, and I want to – we have DJ Moore. That's a big investment, and I want to go get it.
It is a great opportunity for him to really sort of flex. Because if he can come up, I mean, they got
if it works,
right? They got handled there. Maybe one of the worst overall performances by the offense. I mean, forget about the stats. Just watching the game, they couldn't function. Mostly, like, Allen was just under constant duress.
Bulldog, it's 2 years in a row.
Yeah,
in that stadium,
right? The game 2 years ago did not even look and feel. I know the stats. That's why I made the point about the stats. The stats from the game 2 years ago are way worse. Allen's anyway,
9 for 30
than they are. But I felt like the game last year was a worse beating. Like, it just they got handled. And so, all right, let's see what you got, Hotshot. You're the new head coach. You're the play caller. Like, let's see the antidote to, you know, maybe the most elite set of pass rushers in the league, not to mention all the other talent just all over that defense. The corners are great. I mean, they're just loaded. So what are you going to do? You know, how are you going to slow that down? You know, that might be, I mean, it might be all game. It's funny that it's the first one where swinging the ball to Cook or just using Cook as a receiver is a really good idea. That usually comes out fast. That can offset a pass rush. And that might be like that's a very base level analysis, but it's one piece. Brady could construct something that he could get a lot of credit for. Like, if they look like anywhere near the opposite of what they looked like there last year, boy, he'd get a lot of run for that. I mean, they got to do it. That's the hard part, but that's the gig. Like, I got to figure out how to make us not look like the far inferior team on the field, which is really what they looked like in that Monday night game.
Yeah, Thursday night last
Thursday
year.
Thursday night, sorry.
Yeah, still, you're right. They scored early last year in Houston. Cook broke one for 6-0. They missed the kick, but that's their only offensive touchdown in
that
game.
You're right. Davis had a kick return.
Yep. And then field goals.
And they were, you know, 14 first downs. They had a look at it late still, even with all that. So it's not like they got beat by 30. You know, this wasn't the Colt game from whatever year, 21. You know, they still had a chance, even with all the trouble that they had. Mm-hmm. So if he can stabilize that and just like trying to stay on time, sorry to be so football-y.
Ball knower.
But, oh, great, let's chop it up.
That's your slap on the wrist for when you do that.
Here come all the ball knowers to chop it up. Can you just speak English like a normal person, please? Would that be okay? Anyway, I'm done. I don't need to keep going on the point. I've made the point.
Ball knower. Who doesn't love a ball knower?
Me.
Except for you.
I love people who know football.
You do? Generally?
Sure. Yeah.
The Bills in that game in Houston, down 4, final 2 minutes, 4th and 27, hook and ladder.
Hook and ladder, right.
Palmer to Shakir, and they get to 3rd and 1 at the 17. Touchdown wins it. Incomplete for Shakir, false start, and then a pick is how that game ended against Davis Mills and the Texans. It would have been Stroud the year before.
Yeah. Pretty sure. Yeah.
That's the week after they lose in Baltimore?
Yes.
And Allen is 9 for 30 in Houston. Man, it's not. It's like his number one kryptonite place, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Where else would it be? He's won in Arrowhead a bunch of times. He's won in Miami, like it's his backyard.
Yeah.
New England, last year, even they're down 21-0 and win that game in New England. Where else would it be? Won in Pittsburgh more than once.
Yeah, no, I think that's it.
Cincy, it's one loss and the Hamlin game. I think Houston is the one where, as a rookie, he got hurt there.
He got hurt there. Then they make the playoffs, and he's all
the playoff
sugar high. Like, I mean, not that he was terrible the whole game, but still, like,
was he 0-4?
That's not a good memory, I think, for Bills fans, thinking of how he played in that. Well, you still think of it. Anytime he looks sort of frantic, the fumble at the end of the half in the Denver playoff game is Houston. Like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to do too much? Time is running out. You're in your own end. You're running around, one, just holding the ball out, dying for it to get taken from you. Like, dude, get it together.
So he'd be 0-4 there? They beat Houston here in his career, but
I think that's right. Yeah, I don't think they've...
Rookie year, they lost. He got hurt. They lost late with Peterman in that game, the playoff game,
right.
And then each of the last 2 years. Wow. That's week one. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog back after this timeout. This is WGR. Not accept any follow-up questions on the Milwaukee Brewers, but this, like, they're always, because I couldn't answer them, but they're always great. They're maybe the Bills, not the Sabres, but the Bills as a team that, okay, but can you actually make the championship round?
Right.
Can you actually make a World Series now?
Right.
That's why I bring that up.
Yeah, like they're in the playoff pool every year, but are you scared of them? Are they, you got to take down any short series, anything can happen. But you got to take down L.A. eventually.
I think it was last year that they made the NLCS and got swept by the Dodgers. Like, what are your chances?
Right.
That could happen again. I mean, the Dodgers are still awesome, and here are the Brewers, and it might be headed there. I mean, the Braves are good, the Phillies are good.
I wonder if Detroit, this is a baseball segment, if not a baseball show, if Detroit decide. I mean, everybody's in the wild card race, including Detroit. I mean, whatever, the 4.5 out or whatever they are. But if they're going to make a move on Skubal, is this the year Milwaukee goes, you know what? What's it going to take? What's it going to cost? How many of these excellent prospects that I've got does it take to get Skubal onto my team? And I put him in front of this 105-mile-an-hour flame-throwing maniac or behind, whatever.
Love it.
I've got those two cats at the top of my – I mean, they're pitching 4 of 7.
That's right.
Maybe now's the time. Let's go, Brewers.
You know who the favorite is to get Skubal? L.A. Of course.
Go figure.
Of course. Emmett Sheehan or some package going back to Detroit, if the Tigers do that. That'll all be, like, within the next week.
Yeah.
But – you know, the Bills are a team, as we know, that has had all this success, but you can only do so much with it because it's about rings, and they just have not gotten there.
Right.
And that's Milwaukee in baseball.
And maybe just to carry the thread all the way out here on the Bills, comparison, that's why, we get to the trade deadline or an off season where Max Crosby is available or Trey Hendrickson is available or whomever is available, you want them to throw their hat in the ring. You want to do a little Rams FM picks stuff here because, what are we doing here? Like, I want to protect the future to a degree, but is there a moment where you have to say, you know what? We need this. We need that guy. We need a Hellraiser, hair-on-fire defender. Or whatever it is, a receiver that's, better than DJ Moore. Oh, my God. Be still my beating heart.
A.J. Brown.
Yeah, right. But, no.
Do you think they ever even had a
– I don't know.
Did they call on A.J. Brown?
I wonder. I don't know. I mean, that may be a thing where you might have not even been able to get in the room because he wanted to go one place and Philadelphia maybe felt like they wanted to do that. Right by him, I don't know.
You had a cap room issue with A.J. Brown.
Yeah, sure.
But, they paid D.J. Moore like crazy.
Crazy, that's right.
So I, that does get me thinking about, you know, this whole production, you know, because I've never they did Diggs. I mean, Diggs was a first round. It didn't cost a barrel full of stuff because Diggs really wasn't Diggs yet. Like, Diggs got here and became Diggs. And so you won the trade. But, you know, first round pick, it's a reasonable price. It wasn't like, you know, two or three things. So you did that. Von Miller was this. When that happened in free agency, that was a big, big swing. That's, what are we talking about, 5 years ago now? How many years ago was that? 4 years ago? It's a while
four or
ago.
Five.
So, I don't know, like, is DJ, does,
see, I can't place
does
that.
DJ Moore rise to the level of that?
No.
You know, no.
Not,
I don't,
not
I don't,
to me.
No, I don't think so. I don't know if Brandon Bean would tell you with a straight face privately that he thinks it does, but maybe he does. Well, I know publicly how he felt last year about Josh Palmer, which I thought was like, this is like a walking around money contract. What are you talking about? This is not like the answer to your wide receiver problems. It's a guy.
Von Miller was 22, so four okay. years ago, and then 3 years with the Bills. Last year he was in Washington. Played 17 games for Washington last year.
A lot of sacks.
Nine sacks.
Nine? Okay. Yeah. That's
yep.
not a lot.
More than he had here ever.
Yeah, right.
He had eight here his first year.
Yeah, and was
he
on,
got hurt.
Yeah, right. He was on the way to double digits for sure, I think, that year before he got hurt.
So, have you and I done this week? We've had Sal on and talked about DJ Moore a little bit. But I can't get liftoff on him one way or another. And I don't know what's going to tip it for me. I know that. You know, the first time I brought this up to Sal, Sal was kind of like, what's not to like? And, okay, fine. And Friday I talked to Mike Dempsey. After having lots of conversations within fantasy circles and the ADP chasing show where nobody seems to really like him. And I might have tinged the question to Mike like that. Like, just, yeah, DJ Moore? And he's like, I'm in. So that's, you know, fantasy, but if you're in, like if you have that kind of conviction on DJ Moore, you're talking 1,000 yards
and he's catching 100
10
passes.
Touchdowns.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Like, sort of for me, it's like 100, 1,010. So, something like that. Matt Harmon, who was on ADP chasing with me and Pat and Jacob last week, he sort of dismissed DJ Moore at one point. We didn't really talk about him, but I know I got a sense from Matt, reception, perception, that he was like not in.
Mm-hmm.
And then today,
yeah,
yesterday, I think it was yesterday.
I saw it today.
I saw it today.
Yeah.
He brought up DJ Moore. And you know what he said? Like, I can't really decide either. Like, he said, here are the routes where he's strong, and it didn't fit perfectly with Ben Johnson. So there's that reason at least to be optimistic about him, but other things, you know, turn you the other way. So anyway, that is exactly how, well, not exactly, but it's basically how I feel about this, where not even with, like, the second round pick and the $40 million, like, not even.
Considering the cost.
No, just in a vacuum.
Is it going to work? Yeah.
So I'm grasping when it comes to him. Like, I want to have, I'm not drafting him. I guess I could say that. Like, I'll draft Carnell Tate instead, or Jameson Williams instead. Some of those guys who go in the same range, or a running back instead. Basil Tootin. Like, I'm not. But that usually happens to me with the Bills. And I feel like because I never wanted to draft James Cook. I would draft Diggs. Peak Diggs. I love drafting him. Like, that was like a late first round pick. Anyway, DJ Moore is what?
It's complicated. What are the factors? You know, thinking about how I just revisited, just looking at what Matt posted about him, and I think maybe the biggest unknown, because anyone can guess at, well, did he fit with Chicago? They had other guys. Like, is he slowing down? Is he deteriorating? Is he a diminishing asset? And that's when I decided to buy him. that's why he was available, or was he just squeezed out, too much money, younger guys, better guys? But, like, what explains 2 years in a row where his production has gone the wrong way? So you can just hope it's a better circumstance, but that next page is, okay, well, what is this circumstance? And the Bills, by design, I guess, got out of the number one receiver business when they traded Diggs, and they flew the everybody eats flag. And even while Diggs was still here, the offense changed. He became less of a focal point. Khalil Shakir out-targeted him after Brady took over. So you've got all that, and the question, I think, becomes, was everybody eats out of necessity slash convenience? Like, this is our receiving core. We had to divest ourselves of Diggs, and so we're just going to make do, so everybody eats. Or is that really, like, is Brady, how is Brady going to use a number one receiver? Like, does he want to feed somebody? Or does he really like everybody eats? Does Allen like everybody? Like, I don't know. Like,
somebody, they sounded like it.
Somebody brought this up one day, I think, in a couple of weeks we were apart, and maybe I was with Nate, and the guy was like, I don't want Allen feeling like he's got to feed a guy. And I think that could mess him up. And I'm like, do you remember what it was like when Diggs was here? Like, when Diggs was featured, like, he got open all the time.
It was pretty good.
And Allen fed him. Like, I don't think Allen's going to feel hamstrung at all if DJ Moore can get open regularly and they're designing plays to help him get open regularly. I think he will feed him. But do they want to do that is the bigger question, which is why I would understand anyone in, as a, much of a novice as I am about the fantasy space, having a buyer beware. You've got diminishing returns on the last couple of seasons, especially last season. You've got age. You've got a new team, a new scheme for the player anyway, and maybe he's got some familiarity with it from his time with Brady, but whatever. There's a lot of, I don't know about that, I don't know about that, I don't know about that. And then you get to the big one, which is, what does this offense really want to do with a DJ Moore or any other purported number one receiver?
Yeah.
Do they want to feed that guy? Or is it going to be, business as usual, and I'm going to be chucking passes up to Mecole Hardman with my season on the line?
There will be no evidence, no answer in the slightest to that question until Houston.
No. The only thing you're going to get, and I would discourage you from trusting it, not you, I think you know enough.
It's Brady talking.
Brady talking. Say everything. And how they do that. Oh, they're clicking in camp. They're working. Did we ever get like they're on a beach in Hawaii throwing passes? I don't think we got any of that this offseason. That crossed my face anyway.
I know. There's no picture.
What is the relationship? Like, how, are they connected? Do they have good chemistry? Are they on the same page? When Allen breaks, contain and he's roaming around back there, is DJ Moore, does he know where Allen wants him to go or thinks he wants him to go or all that? Like, you'll get some probably encouraging, because it's training camp, reports on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think it'll mean anything. So, yeah, it'll be September before we have a clue. And, hopefully they hit the ground running and it looks great. But that's a lot of questions, I think, that, don't have answers, or at least easy answers right now.
Right. It'll be, the preseason tells you less and less every year.
Yep.
And
I think this, and we talked about this a little earlier, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this is a preseason where we learn less than ever.
It should be.
What's less than nothing? I don't know, nothing from nothing. I'm Billy Preston over here. But
Billy Preston.
Has the show ever sounded older?
Get back.
So that's a lot. That's a lot to sort of weed through to get to, he's going to hit. I don't know.
Just to say one more thing in terms of fantasy drafts, it's not that expensive. Like, picking DJ Moore is not criminal. Where he goes, it's the end of the fifth round. It's not that expensive. The guys I mentioned, all right, well, you don't have to see them having great years either. Jameson Williams is a wild card. Tate is a rookie.
and whoever else, like Odunze is in that kind of cluster of players. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's not the 12th round either, but it's not like so risky to do it. There probably is a pretty good floor for DJ Moore. I mean, maybe last year's season he had 50 catches. Was it 7 touchdowns, whatever he had? And it was his lowest lowest year production wise. That kind of season has to be the floor for him in this situation. I mean, if he comes in under that,
and if healthy, forget it. And if that's what you get, then this is a disaster.
Yeah, right. It was not a win if you do that.
No.
Well,
that's where the cost does come back to like be pertinent. Like
this is the move.
I did this for that.
This is the move in the spotlight this year for Bean. Clearly. It's the DJ Moore trade. Yeah. He didn't use a first-round pick. He traded out. TJ Parker asks Sal, what rookies are you interested in? Well, he's like not even at the top of the list.
He's on to the Saturday guys.
Yeah, right. Right. So this is the move. I mean, they didn't do a lot else. The veteran DBs, I guess. Like this is where it's right in the spotlight. At a position where Bean has gotten so much heat. And, you know, there's your coaching change. There's your promotion if you want it. And now you have this move. And, you know, he doesn't call the plays, but he'd like it probably pretty good if they threw the ball to DJ Moore 10 times a game.
Boy, I would think any guy, any GM, this is not a commentary on what I think or don't think of Brandon Bean, but you put yourself out there like that, considering, you know, what last year was like and the call-in after the draft and all of that, like, boy, he would love to be able to take a victory lap on a receiver that really hits, you know. Like, so, yeah, I don't think that creates any kind of pressure for the coach, I don't think. Like, I got to make sure DJ Moore works. I mean, if DJ Moore works, it's going to be because he gets open and Allen can find him and, like, that's it. There's not going to be anything more or less than that to it, but that's got to all happen, you know? It is, you know, can I go back to, like, add another layer to the, like, question mark stuff? A big part of the disconnect that I, at least what I've read about in Chicago, was that off script, he did not flourish with Williams, and Williams is a very off-script quarterback, maybe more even off-script than Allen is, but Allen is plenty of that. I mean, he is going to get out of there and, you know, be rolling to his right and gesturing with his left arm. And is that something that he is good at? Scramble drill, whatever they call it. Like, is that a strong suit of his? It certainly was not last year in Chicago, from what I've ascertained. That was a big part of the trouble there, is that he couldn't seem to get connected with Williams on those plays. I don't know, maybe that gets exaggerated just because of the one interception late in the playoffs that looked like Moore didn't, like, they just weren't on the same page. You know, he thought to zig and Williams thought he was going to zag or whatever happened there. So maybe that just took on a life of its own to an extent and exaggerated it, but it's something to watch out for, I think, for sure.
He's had a fine career, and he's in a position where perhaps, like, he can erase any doubts about, you know, his talent, because he's got Allen now. He's had quarterback tougher situations, often much tougher over the course of his career. There's two particular plays I remember him for, and this isn't fair to him at all, but it's what happens. One is when he walked off the field during a play with the Bears 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm just going to walk off. During the play, you see him at the top of the screen. He walks off the field during the play.
I remember that.
What's that? And then another is, it was Carolina at Atlanta. I was in my car. You know this one?
Mm-hmm. It's the helmet. Like,
is it? Is it helmet? It's like a Hail Mary touchdown catch. They're down 6 in Atlanta, and it's not Bryce Young, but it doesn't matter. It's like a few years ago. They're down 6 in Atlanta. And he catches a bomb in the end zone, and he gets an unsportsmanlike. Is it a helmet?
I think he took his helmet off.
he gets an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, which pushes the extra point back to like a 50-yard kick, and they missed, and they lost.
Right. I thought that was New Orleans, not Atlanta. Okay, all right.
Because I was listening to the Falcons broadcast.
Story. Yep. That's
not fair at all to the guy. He's had a fine career.
It's a tough moment. Yeah.
Keep it together there, buddy.
Right?
I mean, if you had to walk off the field, you got to go, you got to go. But, I mean, just not the time to lose your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably cost him the game. Who was that quarterback? P.J. Walker.
The team around Josh Allen continues to get worse. Moving off McDermott, I mean, I understand it. People were out on him. But promoting your offensive coordinator, Brady? So now you got a first-time head coach? He's running the whole ship. And now you're looking at a defense. They were 31st in the league against the run. They didn't get better on the defensive line. So they got a new DC now, toggling to a 3-4. I don't know that I love that. We'll see. Jury's still out. The big move was, hey, let's bring in DJ Moore. We need to win on the outside because Keon Coleman, he's not that guy. So we overpay for DJ Moore. And the biggest hit was promoting the GM, giving him all the power. And you look at his last draft picks and it's like, whoa, I think Josh Allen's got to leave Buffalo to win a Super Bowl.
I'll say the last part I agree with. It's not that last part. The last part was the little weird that Bean does get the promotion. Ultimately, it was more just to set the hierarchy. I've moved on from that. Jason McIntyre of Fox Sports.
I've got great news hearing that clip. It is Jason McIntyre that said it.
Well, I do want to say, because he's filling in for Colin Cowherd, and there was a tweet from Cowherd a couple of weeks ago sort of saying the same thing about the Joe Brady hiring. You know, Colin's whole point was he's like, well, I read an article and I went through the names that they were connected to, and they were only going to hire Joe Brady. Who hired this cycle wouldn't have led you to be like, they fired Sean McDermott for this guy. Don't bring up Kevin Stefanski. He was hired 2 days before the Bills even fire Sean McDermott.
Right. He's already gone.
So Stefanski is off the table. You can't bring him up. Why would John Harbaugh's name be a positive? The Ravens are effectively doing the exact same thing. Also, by the way, I hope he's saying the same thing about the Ravens, that their roster is getting worse and that they've hired this first-time head coach, who, by the way, not a direct elevation, but very connected to the Ravens. Jesse Minter was always the favorite to get the Ravens coaching job. So let's go through the coaches that were hired in this cycle. We've already mentioned three of them. Brady, Minter, Stefanski, four. And then, of course, Harbaugh. Todd Monken? Is he moving the needle?
The guy that effectively kind of gets John Harbaugh let go because he wants to stick by Monken.
Mm-hmm. Mike LaFleur, Rams OC, maybe. Because he's connected to Sean McVay, potentially.
Potentially.
Clint Kubiak.
Was not available until the end of the Super Bowl.
They have to wait a while for that to happen. And they would potentially have to compete with other teams who are maybe going to give him more control. So now you're waiting till all the way to the end of the season, and then maybe it doesn't happen. And even still, first-time head coach.
Right.
First-time head coach. Jeff Hafley for the Dolphins, Packers defensive coordinator. They're saying the exact same thing. It's cool, you fired a defensive coordinator to bring in a defensive coordinator as your head coach.
So the point that McIntyre makes about like first-time head coaches, well, yeah, that's a majority of them this cycle. It's Stefanski, who's, again, hired before McDermott's even let go, and John Harbaugh, a guy who has managed to do it worse.
Well, and then there's one other. Steelers, Mike McCarthy.
Cool.
He is hired the day before the Bills announced that they've promoted Joe Brady. But that's my point. And Robert Saleh. But Saleh's defensive, so I don't really want to totally bring him up with that because, again, it's no team does that. They don't go back-to-back. You do that rotation. It was always going to be an offensive mind for Allen. But that's my point is what coach that the Bills could have hired after firing Sean McDermott wouldn't have led to some similar response. There wasn't Sean Payton available. There wasn't. The cycles are not always going to be the same. The same is also being said about college football. There's a few spots that are probably going to be open by the end of this year. But now, the jobs may not ultimately be the same. You know, Penn State, not going to be available. LSU, not going to be available. Auburn, Florida, not going to be available. Likewise, you're not always going to have a Lane Kiffin out there Sometimes you're going to have to go to a really fun coordinator or a guy that was winning at Liberty and hope and pray that when he gets to the SEC, it's not too much. That's what the Bills are doing. The Bills sat there and yeah, look, sure. You can look through the names and go, well, they interviewed Philip Rivers, really? Yeah, they also interviewed Grant Yudinski multiple times. A guy who now going into this season is looked at as one of the up-and-coming offensive coordinators in football.
And yet he doesn't call the plays in Jacksonville. Liam Cohen does. And he'd be a first-time head coach.
He'd be a first-time head coach. So, where the Bills, I think, are in some ways playing it safe, and this could be a negative. Brady has been involved in the organization. He's been there for 3 years. He has a connection with Allen. And ultimately, his offense can stay the same. He's already been calling it. He's already been doing it. Nothing really has to change there potentially. And it could work. And if DJ Moore is just a little bit better, they're going to be just fine offensively. Defensively is where the big changes have to happen. And that's where you bring in Jim Leonard and you hope the run defense gets a little bit better, even just a little bit better from what it was, which was near the bottom of the league. The pressures go up. Pass rush numbers go up. Now you're cooking with gas. I do not agree at all that the roster has gotten worse. That I find to be very lazy.
Ready? You're telling me the guy who has said Mike Evans never won a Super Bowl thinks that the Bills roster got worse?
Well, and I know this is just Jason McIntyre, but I've heard it enough this offseason that I find it very lazy. Where have they gotten worse as a position group? It's not the offensive line. They lost a left guard. They promoted a guy that's been their swing tackle for years, who's been one of the most underrated players on the Bills for years. They're going to be fine there. They keep their center. Wide receiver. Oh, they lost Brandon Cooks and added DJ Moore. That's an upgrade. That room is better.
Oh, Zach, they overpaid for it.
A second-round pick.
I
know me and you have talked about it going back and forth.
It wasn't an overpayment. It's not.
Well, especially because Waddle, later on in the offseason, what is a first and a third to get him from Miami to Denver? That's a bit much. Corner. They add another corner in the second round, plus having Max Harrison in the second year. Christian Benford is still there. D'Alford, I think at this point, is an upgrade over what they had in Taron Johnson. Linebacker is questionable. I will grant you linebacker. Terrell Bernard was not good last year, but he was dealing with injuries. We'll see what that looks like now.
But is that room worse?
But right, is that room worse enough where you're sitting there, they're just getting so bad now? It is not the Chiefs roster where everyone openly is looking there going, I don't really know where the positives are. I'm failing to find where the plus sign is. Where for the Bills, James Cook, this time last year was considered an okay running back. Good, fine. If you say anything less than he's a great running back, then you're just being, I think, contrarian. He led the league in rushing last year. The last 2 years, he's hitting double-digit rushing touchdowns. Is he Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs? No. But he keeps getting better, and they're not overusing him. He's put in a great position, and he was their big play guy last year.
He is a legitimate weapon for them.
So I have a really hard time hearing they're getting worse. Then you got to give me examples. What room got worse from last year? And you can't. It's not a flashy offseason. There's no doubt about that. They did not add Myles Garrett. They did not trade for Justin Jefferson. But a team that is basically don't have a bunch of crappy turnovers against Denver away from being in another AFC championship game. And what do they do? Well, let's go at a guy that had 8.5 sacks and facing a ton of double teams coming off a torn ACL and Bradley Chubb. Hey, we need somebody to go win on the outside. We noticed the last 2 years, Amari Cooper, Brandon Cooks, they come in around halfway through the year and the offense wakes up. The passing offense looks so much better. Let's go maybe add DJ Moore before middle of the season.
We can grab a dynamic talent and it's going to only cost a second round pick.
The offensive line, still very good. James Cook, still very good. Allen is not 36. He's not at the end of his career. He's 30. He arguably, mentally, is in the prime of his career. He's got the same OC going forward. And maybe that's it, just a few tweaks. And I know that is frustrating. It's frustrating for me as well, because you do want to see wholesale changes. You want to see that, quote unquote, yeah, the results weren't good enough. We're going to change things. Sometimes you only need tweaks here or there.
When you have a good team that is constantly in a conversation to make the conference championship game, even if they don't, they're in the conversations, or they become the biggest mystery of why didn't it happen, it becomes a surprise that they don't make it. For a team that does not have a long-standing track record of success, it's seen as a disappointment when they don't make it to the championship game round.
Yeah, so
like that's where it is to a point, Zach, where the tweaking is probably the right way to say it. You need minor adjustments. You don't tear down something that has been incredible in the overarching scale of things that just doesn't get it done at the worst opportune times. You don't tear that down to the studs. You just, that's bad business. It's how you lose people. That's how you lose fans. It's not smart. So I'll give them credit. They did enough to a point where, yeah, guess what? We're going to do some fact-finding this year now, too. This is not just making tweaks, Zach. This is a fact-finding mission. How much of this really is McDermott? And if things stay relatively same and they get eliminated where they usually do, and then the draft record looks the same, then we can start looking at the other guy. But right now, you change the easiest thing that you can change.
Well, I will say that conversation has to come much quicker.
Yes, that's why this season has to be a fact finder.
And it's also why it can sometimes be a worry. It should normally be like this when your head coach and GM are kind of attached to the hip. They probably should have gone together, though. I can understand and agree with that point. Bean's draft record has been rough. It has not put together a great roster. It is a good roster with a great quarterback and a great running back. That's probably good enough. Because if they win a Super Bowl, it probably means somebody else elevated. Someone else got them over the hump or helped them get over the hump. But that is the one thing I mentioned that I'm with McIntyre on the clip of, yeah, Bean's drafting record is difficult to look at and find anything positive. It's Cook, it's Allen, and it's a bunch of guys who aren't bad, but not great. And even giving second contracts to them is oftentimes proving to be albatrosses. Bernard, even Rousseau a little bit as well. So my biggest issue with that is they got their roster's getting worse. It's not. It's just not maybe having the pop that points to comfortably they're getting much better. They are better than last year, I think, on paper. They're certainly not worse. 803-0550, the number to call. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Jarrett Bailey of SB Nation. He's got his predictions out this year. We were talking a little bit about ours in the first segment. We'll get some of yours and some other tweets as well. Keon Coleman yesterday did some numbers as well. We got some responses on what would be a good season for him. We'll touch on those when we come back here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.